At this stage, I'm introducing two speakers at once. We have a mother and a daughter to speak to us most appropriately. First of all, the mother of the pair is Jean. Jean Moss, who took her MA honours in English literature with French as a subsidiary subject in my current home city, Aberdeen. This was back in 1970. And then after a bit of a gap, returned to university education when she did a PGCE in 1996. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. After her first degree, Jean worked for the civil service in the Department of Industry and then chose to have an 11-year career break to raise her two daughters. She worked as an accountant, or rather with an accountant, when she returned to the workplace, but decided it was not for her. And she found out from an ad in The Guardian. Doesn't The Guardian figure awfully often in our careers? This ad suggested that people might learn to train as a teacher on a part-time basis. So she'd always been interested in modern languages. And did in fact train to become a teacher of French and German, which she did until her recent retirement. Following Jean's discussion, we're going to turn to her daughter Rebecca, who graduated in law at University College London and then took a master's in business and the environment. She worked as a qualified solicitor for Kirkpatrick Lockhart and then Allen and Overy, who are one of the magic circle. She returned to them part-time after her son's birth, but in 2012, after the birth of a second son, she actually decided that her main interest was environmental law, and so she worked for E3G. But her mother tells us she probably won't mind us knowing that she's actually now moving on to Forum for the Future. So I would like to present, first of all, Jean and then Rebecca to speak to us.
Robert, can I declare another interest before I stop here, that my other daughter is Kate Wilson. So you get three for the price of one today. Okay, right, I'm going to take us back a little bit. Obviously, I'm a little bit older than most of the speakers that you've listened to already, but I want to take you even further back than that, and I want to tell you the story of somebody called Ethel Scott. This is Ethel Scott in the picture here. She was born in Coatbridge in Lanarkshire in Scotland in 1920. Her father was a policeman, and her mother, before she was married, was a tailoress. That particular point in time, women like her mother gave up work when they got married and stayed at home to look after their children. At the time that Ethel went to school, the official school leaving age was 14. And in Scotland, the system at that time was such that everybody took a qualifying exam, and depending on how they saw their future panning out, they either did 2 years or 3 years to enable them to leave school at 14, or they did 5 or 6 years, which took them on to university. Very, very few people at that point in time went to university. Most people were expected to leave work and earn a living, and that's what happened to Ethel. She learned shorthand and typing, and she worked in the office of a firm of building contractors. She was very good at her job, and she very quickly was appointed secretary to the owner of the firm. When war broke out in 1939, she was still working for the building contractors, and then in 1941, unmarried women were called up to join the armed forces, and Ethel joined what was called the Auxiliary Territorial Service, the ATS, and she was posted to Strathpeffer. I can't understand why Strathpeffer, because it's in the north of Scotland near Inverness. I don't know what they thought was going to happen there, but anyway, she was posted to Strathpeffer, where she worked for 4 years as a wireless operator. In Strathpeffer, she met David Halley, who was also posted there, and he was serving in the Cameronians. They got married in 1945, immediately after the war, and for Ethel, who'd had the freedom, the independence of working as a wireless operator, she went back to square one. Married women were not expected to work, and so she had no possibility of going back to paid employment. It was expected that her husband would support her, which he did, and she went to live with her in-laws. Can you imagine that? The ensuing years were spent homemaking, raising three children. And if she was unhappy with what happened to her after that period where she had been so free and able to do what she wanted to do, her stout Presbyterian upbringing prevented her from ever expressing any dissatisfaction with her lot at that particular time. In 1968, life changed very dramatically for Ethel because at the age of 48, her marriage failed and circumstances were such that after a break of 23 years from paid employment, she had to find a job. So dusting off her now somewhat rusty secretarial skills, she became the secretary to the Laird of a Scottish estate in Scotland and did that job exceedingly well too. So for Ethel Scott and many women of her generation, there was no something in between. The choices were, if you were unmarried, you could be employed, you could be educated, you could do whatever you wanted to do. If you got married, for the vast majority of women of that generation, you gave up work and your husband supported you. So for her, there was no something in between. It was all or nothing. What happened to Ethel Scott had profound influence on my career because you probably realised she was my mother. And looking back on how things were for her, I think, you know, it was just the most awful, awful life. She stayed at home all the time. And I didn't think that was, you know, odd because all my friends' mothers did exactly the same. Nobody went out to work. They all stayed at home and looked after their children. But as I grew up and educational opportunities started opening up for me, for example, I was one of five pupils in my primary school to pass the 11 plus and to go to grammar school. And I went to Lanark Grammar School, which was a very prestigious grammar school. I was the only member of my generation of my family to go to university. So my life was kind of moving along a fairly sort of different path. And I often wondered whether my mother, having tasted that independence, that freedom, the possibilities that could have opened up for her, you know, was she ever thinking, you know, there's more to life than homemaking and child rearing? But if she ever thought that, she never said so, and she never wanted to talk about it either. She did what was expected of her all through her life. She never questioned what was happening to her. She did what was expected of her. So I looked at her and I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be different. And so my life developed on a very different pattern. In 1961, my father's job took us from Lanark, where we were living, to a place called Sudbury in Suffolk. And I said, Sudbury? Suffolk? What? Where is that? You know, we live in Scotland. Do I want to go and live there? No, I certainly don't. I was loving being in the grammar school. I came top of my class in that end of term exams, and we moved just after Easter. And so I was very, very, very resentful about having been whisked away from what I really enjoyed doing. So I became the teenager from hell. I didn't want to live in Sassenach country. I was William Wallace. I was Braveheart. I was going back to Scotland. And I never stopped moaning and groaning and complaining about the fact that here I was where I didn't want to be. So eventually I succeeded. I went back to Aberdeen University in 19... Well, I went back. I went to Aberdeen University in 1966. My school in Suffolk was mediocre, to say the least. It was a bilateral girls' high school. I'd gone from Lanark Grammar School, which was the most wonderful place, to this place where if you were a girl, and it was a girls' school, what did you want to do? You were going to be a teacher, you were going to be a secretary, or you were going to be a nurse. And if you wanted to do anything other than that, forget it. Careers advice constituted a suitcase in the history teacher's cupboard. And you would knock on her door and say, could I have an appointment to talk about where I'm going to university and how my career might develop? And she'd say, the case is in the cupboard, rummage through the prospectuses. If you find anything that suits you, bring it up and I'll tell you what to do. The headmistress, when I said I'm going to apply to a Scottish university, said, I know nothing about Scottish universities. You are on your own. So I sorted it out myself. At the time that I went to university, my intention was to become a teacher, although, you know, I could have thought of other things, but I did want to become a teacher. And my graduation in 1970 coincided with my parents' divorce. So there was no money for further study. And so to do a PGCE would have been quite difficult at that point in time. So I joined the civil service, moved to London in 1971 and worked in the Department of Trade and Industry at a time when Britain was joining what was then called the Common Market. And I was working in a section that was involved in the negotiations. I used to shuttle backwards and forwards from Victoria Street to the Foreign Office. And I loved it. It was really lovely. In 1971, I married Robin. Met him in the sixth form at school. He was at the grammar school in the town. I was in the girls' high school. We had a debating society. I hated him when I first met him because he just tried to disrupt every debate that we ever had and thought that girls had pea brains. And anyway, somehow I ended up marrying him, and we set up home in London. In the early 1970s, house prices are a little bit like they are at the moment. They were rocketing off and we couldn't afford to buy a house. So we moved up to Newcastle. So having ever just passed through on my way to university, here we were in the northeast of England. So we moved there in 1973. Robin at the time was working for NALGO, the Local Government Officers Union, and I got a transfer to the Civil Service Regional Office. Just before I left London, I passed a promotion board to move up a rung in the Civil Service. But when you went to the regions, you had to wait till somebody dropped dead before you actually got a promoted job. So it took me 5 years to get promoted. And 2 weeks after being promoted, I discovered I was pregnant with Kate. So here was my first dilemma. What did I do? In the early 1970s, it was very, very difficult to come by childcare, particularly where we lived in a village in kind of rural Northumberland. Maternity leave in the civil service at that time was 3 months. They would keep your job open for you. If you came back after 3 months, you couldn't have any longer than that. They would not take you on a part-time basis at the regional office. I think you might have been able to do it in London, but definitely not in the regional office. So in fact, my choices were no choice. I couldn't go back to my job. And so I decided that I would stay at home to look after my children. So Kate was born in 1978. And there she is. A little bald-headed person with lovely curly hair now. That's what I looked like in 1978. Not so grey-headed as I am now. And then along came Rebecca in 1981. Initially, I thought, well, I'll just stay at home for a little bit to look after these two girls. But I actually ended up staying at home for 11 years. Why would you not want to stay at home with two such beautiful, beautiful daughters? They just were the joy of my life. So 11 years, I spent my time being very, very busy. I chaired two PTAs. I was governor of two schools. I did a little bit of private tutoring and I did a one-year creative writing course. So in amongst looking after my children, I had other things that I was interested in doing, and I probably could have gone on doing that for longer than I did, but I thought, no, come on, I've got a degree, I'm educated, I need to start thinking about getting back into the world of work. So I opened my local paper one day. First of all, I investigated, could I go back to the civil service? And I could have gone back to civil service, but I would have had to have gone back to the rank that I went in at and start to claw my way up through the promotion ladder again. And thought, no, I don't want to do that. So I opened our local paper, and here was this advertisement from a local accountant saying, I have a mission of helping women with children who have been out of work to get back into the world of work. I thought, that sounds quite interesting. I had been working in the civil service doing selective financial assistance for companies who wanted to either expand or set up. So I knew my way around a balance sheet, I understood profit and loss accounts, I could do VAT. So I went along for this interview and convinced this lady accountant that I could do what she wanted me to do. It wasn't a graduate job, but I thought, 11 years out, I need to do something that's not going to be too challenging. So I went to work as an accounts assistant, dealing mainly with sort of little local companies. I think, have I got a photograph? No, that was my PTA and school governor years. You see Kate's hair is beginning to get almost curly. It's that was her then. And then this is when I went back to work. So Rebecca, as you can see, followed me with the owl-eyed look. And Kate's curls are coming in really nicely along here. So this is what they looked like when I went back to work. So I was working 20 hours a week. And the job I had gave me the flexibility to still go to school concerts, to still go to harvest festivals, to still go on class trips to the local sewage works and such like things. I could work when I wanted to during the day and when I wanted to in the evening as well. But I thought, if I stay doing this, I don't really want to be a tax assistant or accounts assistant for the rest of my life. Do I really want to be an accountant? I don't really. This is not for me, but I'll do it for the time being. And then one day, I open The Guardian. This is 1995. And I see this OU advert saying, would you like to train on a part-time basis to be a teacher? And I thought, well, that's what I wanted to do, you know, way back when I actually went to university. Yeah, I'll give that a go. So I contacted them and I said, you know, I've been away from my academic work for a long, long time. I've been working part time. My main degree is in English literature, but I do have French as well. And I've kept it current. Da, 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 da. So they said, oh, yeah, yes, we'll take you on. So the course involved, it was an 18-month course, and now if you do a PGC, you have to sort of go through a university or schools direct or whatever you like to call it, and you would be sent around different schools. The Open University course, you found one partner school, and you spent 16 of the 18 weeks training, teacher training practice in that school, with 2 weeks in another school. So I approached my local school, where I had been the chairman of governors, and asked if they would take me on as a student there. So I did. So manic period ensued, which when I look back on it now, I don't know how on earth we ever coped with it. I worked in the school holidays in my accountancy job. I had upped my hours to 30 hours a week, 5 of them unpaid, so that I could have time off to go and do this teaching practice. I saw clients after school hours. I fitted the teaching practice around half-term holidays and summer holidays and all the rest of it. I had my daughter saying to me, Mummy, could we make an appointment to talk to you, please? And that was how hectic it was. It was absolutely amazing. And I had to go to like weekend schools and seminars and what have you. Anyway, in 1996, I graduated. You can see Kate's curls coming here quite beautifully, and Becca's grown her hair a little bit as well. On my graduation day at the City Hall in Newcastle, it was the cup final day. And Rebecca and my husband were staunch Manchester United fans. They did all their kind of PhDs and the MAs and da-da-da-da-da, first of all, and the PGCEs were at the very end. And I think I was about the second last person to go up onto the stage. And as I walked up onto the stage, they were all going, woo-woo-woo-woo, at the background. As I came down off the stage, Robin and Rebecca were out the back door going off to watch the match. So Kate and I went and had some retail therapy as a little reward. So I graduated and I got a job, and that's what I looked like when I was a teacher. The owl-eyed look still going through. No grey hair, that was me. So I taught in three schools. So I started off in the school where I'd done my training, Hexham Middle School. I was in charge of a year six class, and I taught French across the entire year group, but I also taught English, I taught history, I taught geography, I taught RE, which was interesting, but that was not what I wanted to do. I wanted to teach languages. So I then went to Prado High School, where I'd done my 2 weeks of teacher training practice. And I taught there for a couple of years, but I was made redundant because the school head had messed up the finances and they had to pay people off. And then eventually I moved to Emmanuel College in Gateshead. Some of you might have heard of Emmanuel College because it's the infamous school where they teach creationism. I don't teach it, but the head is a creationist. So I went to work there in 1999. And I would echo what our previous speaker said. Teaching was the most wonderful, wonderful career. I obviously was meant to do that. I didn't do it at the time that I originally thought I would do it, but I was obviously meant to do it, and I absolutely loved it. I taught German to GCSE, and I taught French to A-level, and I had the pleasure over the time that I was working there three times to have A-level classes where I had actually taught the students from year seven all the way through, and that was absolutely amazing, absolutely amazing. Anyway, my husband took early retirement in 2002, so he continued working for NALGO, which then became Unison. And when he moved up to the northeast, they had three of everything, three regional secretaries, three deputies, three senior regional officers. And he was offered a very handsome package to leave. So he left in 2002, and he's been trying to get me to retire ever since then, but I've held out. He became the consummate house husband, so I could go out to work in the morning, and I wasn't worrying about what we're eating tonight. Do I have to go to the supermarket? Is there anything sorting out? I would come home at night to a restaurant meal on the table for me. So, you know, my work then just was, I didn't have to worry about anything. It was just absolutely fantastic. Anyway, I did agree to retire this year. So in July, that was my last hurrah. This is my department. We had a male head of department, and all these lovely, lovely people were such good colleagues, and we just had the most fantastic time. So my in-between, something in-between, I don't know how I would describe it, because I didn't have a something in-between at the time that most people would think, you know, I've got young children, I want to go back. My children were a little bit older when I went, and at the time that I eventually took up teaching, they were both sort of, you know, they'd grown up and they were sort of not off my hands, but they'd gone off to, you know, to be independent young people. I look back to my mother and I think I mirrored her path to a certain extent in that she stayed at home to look after children, and she reinvented herself at the age of 48. She had no choice about staying at home to look after children, and I did. And I never for a minute regret any of the 11 years that I spent at home. A lot of people, well, my daughters sometimes say to me, you know, do you wish that you had gone back to work? And I don't. I don't regret those 11 years for one minute. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed them. So my two young daughters, two young daughters. I won't say how old they are, but they're feisty young women and they have made their own paths in life. They do completely different things, but they have managed, and I think Rebecca will be able to tell you, they have managed the something in between the two different things. I've got four absolutely adorable grandchildren, and I've now got time to actually spend more time with them. My challenges now are, I'm learning to speak Italian, I'm learning to play the piano, I've joined a choir, and I'm thoroughly enjoying retirement, and I would thoroughly recommend it to anybody.